never gave you a compliment without a challenge. Maybe he liked a song that my husband's chorus did. Maybe he liked it. Maybe they did a good job of it. But he wouldn't say that. He would say, I think in this number, this one part can be improved. Or could I make a suggestion for the next time you sing this number? Which was a beautiful way to challenge you. And that's the kind of man he was, and teachers adored him because they worked harder for him all the time. He was so marvelous. I didn't teach under him, I subbed under him. And he kept his word and gave me a lot of work that year, just as a call-in person. But it was sad when he was here such a short time before his death, because I think it would have pulled us up faster than we did now, because he had had so much experience. But it was a wonderful step for Mr. Ammerman, because that's when Mr. Ammerman decided, well, they offered it to him, and he says, well, I've been principal here a long time. If I'm ever going to do anything more, I better do it now. And he did. And he took the job over and stayed, as we all know, so many, many years. I don't know exactly how many. Must be in the high 20s. He's up there. So that's the way times change. It's I had a girl talk to me just the other day saying, I envy you that you lived in Northville when it was a small town. They were talking about the growth of Northville now and how things are changing so rapidly you can't keep up with it. You go to a club meeting or a church meeting or anything and you don't know half the people anymore. And she said, I envy you because you knew everybody in town then, and you knew them thoroughly. You knew them well. And I thought, well, yes, I have been lucky that way. Northville has given me that small town type of living, and it's been able to broaden my attitudes toward a lot of things in the time I've lived here. I think we're a wonderful town in our relationship with that environment around us. We're close to Ann Arbor, which gives us many opportunities. We're close to Detroit if we have to get there for anything that we don't have out here. And all this in consideration, we have been very blessed. And whether we like the huge buildup now or not, we're going to have to accept it and learn to live with it. But it's got to, we knew it was coming, and it's here, and we've got to learn to adjust with it.
You're still teaching, as I understand. The church.
Yes. Once a teacher, you don't get away from it very easily.
How many years have you been?
I am still teaching a Bible study class at our church. It's an ecumenical class. It just happens to meet in our church, but it is it is open to anyone. I got sort of talked into that. I need to use the word roped in. 9 years ago, and I've been at it ever since. I can't let it go because I like to teach, and because it's helping me keep busy in my older years. I know I'm way too old to be up there with all these young girls, but I have the most wonderful class this year again. Every year I think that I can't have that many again, but they came in September when we opened for our ninth year. It was astounding how many has signed up for my class. So I can't stop as long as they're coming and as long as I have the health to do it. But it's keeping me young to be with these young girls. I just marvel at their outlook in life compared to my outlook in life at their age. I also marvel at how they do all these things when they are raising their families. We didn't do that in our day. We stayed home with our children, and when they were old enough, then maybe we went back into teaching or something. But now, some of those girls arrive in class every Thursday morning with three youngsters from the nursery. And how they get three youngsters ready and up there and their lessons studied and give all morning to that type of thing, I don't think I could have done it. I don't think I would have done it. I would say, no, I'll wait and do it some other way. But that has been the, I have been very active in my church, and that is my life now. And a lot of other societies and clubs around town.
I was going to say, you've been a member of Women's Club.
I've been a member of Women's Club. I think right now I'm the oldest member who still comes to meetings. We have some older members that probably joined before I did, but they are living in Arizona or Florida or somewhere and are not here, and we hardly ever see them. But I am still an active member that way.
What changes have you seen, especially with Women's
Club? Oh, there's a lot of change in the Women's Club. I think I listed as 32. They listed at the end of the year. I came in really in 31. And I know exactly because it was just before my first baby arrived. I was very pregnant at the time, and the girl that went in with me at that time also was pregnant. In fact, our babies were born three weeks apart. And that was Pat Stalker, who was very well known in this town at one time, and who also was a former teacher here. Women's Club was meeting at that time in the old library, which was on, what is that street? Wing Street, I guess it is. It was on Wing Street. Right across, from, well, it's where Mags is now, isn't it? It's part of that. And it was a beautiful setting for a club. You had your bookshelves all around you. You had a fireplace there that you could, in winters, they often had a fire going when we met there. You had a balcony at the top, at the back, where if the overflow downstairs would make you climb the stairs. That was practical. It was a warm, cozy setting for a group of women to meet. We met every week when I first joined. That was in 31. Every week. Now, to get a program up for the same women every week from October to March was a job. But they did studies then more than we do now. Now we have to be entertained. But there, the women themselves studied different things, books, topics and things, and worked together and got better acquainted that way too. My first part in a program, I joined in the fall, in October of 1931, and those were bad years, remember. And in the spring of 1932, a few months later, I was pregnant when I joined, my baby came in December, and in the spring of that year, we had a program that they wanted me to be in. And it was a shawl program. They dug out of the trunks of Northville all the old shawls that they could find, and they built a program around these shawls, the history of these shawls, what they were used for, and so on. Well, you can imagine which one I got. I got the baby shawl. And I had to perform that afternoon, sitting in a rocking chair, rocking my own child, who was about two or three months at the most at the time, and singing to her Brahms' lullaby in German. Now that was my, it was a musical program, but that was my part in it. Mm-hmm. That was my introduction and performing for the Women's Club programs. And it's a big memory in my life.
Sure.
Because it was so personal. And And we had some very talented women who put on some beautiful programs. We used to really work hard on those programs. And it wouldn't be alone, you'd be with a group that would be responsible. We had a beautiful Christmas program, another musical. I generally worked on the musical ones. And that became so well-liked that they repeated it several Christmases without changing it much, because it just got to be loved. And it was a group of Christmas songs put together with a saying, and one person could be, we had a narrator to sort of blend them together, and then we had our own chorus singing the songs, a little small chorus. We weren't as many members then as now, and but that pulled it all together, and you'd have 15, 20 people on the program in the singing or in some part of the acting out of that, and it became a beautiful program of Christmas music, of the unusual carols that we don't hear of so much from foreign countries, and we have a setting accordingly, and that became a very popular program for several years. Then they changed it to meeting only every other, I don't know when that change came in, but every other week, and that's the way it is today. Twice a month instead of four times a month, which lessened the pressure of the programs, but I think we lost something too in stopping it every other week. Because there, it became just a habit to go every week. It's just a beautiful day that you look forward to because the programs are so excellent. And as I say, they studied hard. They worked on these. They're just like getting up and reviewing a long thesis that you've been working on a long time. But they were marvelous, marvelous women in that group. Because it was formed as a study group, and they continued that for a good many years. And now it's good, but it's good in another way. There's just a change that has taken place in that.
You remember the review, Northville Review. How long has that been?
I don't know when that started. I came in after I stopped teaching. Mm-hmm. And so that, it had been going on a long time, but I don't know just when it started.
But it mainly was to review books.
Just to review books and get to know a different group of people, which is, I guess, our main reason for joining any club, is to get to be included in a group and work together. And that's worthwhile. To get back to the school, now this is not a sequence at all, but before we get away from the old high school here, we definitely needed that new high school. The crowded conditions the last few years in the old one is, if you ever read that book, Upstairs, Downstairs, in the school systems of New York, that was Northville there for a while. In the passing of classes, and this is when I was teaching full-time in the junior high, in the passing of classes, we had to have upstairs and downstairs ways of commuting, of getting to the next class. Otherwise, we would not have made it in the time allowed. So the one stairs became the downstairs, and the other end of the hall was the upstairs. And you better learn it fast, because you couldn't go against it. And that was very necessary that we built that school on the hill. And then now they've expanded it even more so. You see, changes come, changes go.
What would be some of the curriculum in way, like when your husband started?
Well, he had in his department, he had pretty, he could do pretty much what he wanted to do, because there was nothing here when he came. There was no band, there was no chorus, there was nothing. It had to be built up completely from scratch, which in a lot of ways is good. I mean, he didn't have to tear down anything. There was nothing to tear down. He could build it up in his own way. We were very proud the first year that he was here. He started with the younger ones. He knew that to start with doing too much with the seniors, they would soon be gone. But his theory was to start and build up from the base. And so he started with the eighth graders and found, it was the octet. He found these eight girls with good voices, and he trained them, took them to a contest in Lansing that same year, and they won first place. And that inspired this town so much. Just these eight eighth graders that did that for their school. And that was his first big, there were many honors after that, but that was his first big one, and it meant a lot. He also took students every summer up to Interlaken, the music students that desired that type of instruction, for 2 weeks. It was a different setup up there than it is now. But then they had a 2 week period where you could go up there and have this special training in music and get a taste of what Interlaken was all about. And that was interesting, and it was very, we never had trouble getting folks to go up there as long as they had that program. Then they changed it up there too later on. But that was interesting. But you had to build up the love of music, and that was what had to be done, because when you don't have anything here for all those years, you have to start somewhere, and you've got to get the desire. And he had great success in building the choir, which was his first love, I think, over the band. The band was, they tried to have a community band when we were first here. They were still struggling with a little community band. And a man from Detroit by the name of Mr. Head, I think it was Mr. Earl, Edwin Head, that was his name. Head was his last name anyway. And he came out, but what he would do, he had several sons that were good players, and he'd bring his family out to play in this group, and it was wonderful because they were all good players, and he was a good director. But you see, it was not just a community band then, he was importing people. And but as the high school started a band, then the other diminished over the years. He died, and I think that's what killed it, probably. I don't remember the details, but he did die about that period of time. So it's, then the band started to grow, but it takes a long time. There again, you have to start down in the grades in order to get the value of the polished player before he graduates. And so it's a constant turnover in all your high school work. Well, in every department it's that way. But he did have a lot of success. One of our townspeople who helped the band a lot financially and gave them the lift when they needed the lift was Ed Langfield, who had our vanilla place up here on Rogers. I don't think he himself was a musician of any kind, but he loved to help people that needed help. And he bought them their first uniforms. And he started the process of feeding ice cream cones or something here on Memorial Day to the children who marched and so on. And he was a great backer of the band. Well, that didn't hurt. That helped help the children a lot. And they got proud of their band and prouder as it grew. It was hard. Instruments were so very expensive, and the school had no money where you could have a rental program. So the parents had to buy the instruments because the school just couldn't do it. And that took time, too. Later, they did own a few instruments, and the bigger ones that the child could not afford. But it grew, and they got popular. For years, they were the ones that were chosen to play at the state fair every Labor Day. And they looked forward to that each year. Of course, they liked the fair part. They played a very short time. They had their fun the rest of the day. But that was Labor Day, always. So vacations were Memorial Day, they marched, 4th of July, they marched, and Labor Day, they marched. So those were the three dates that they were. And he was pretty strict with them. They played, they gave up other things to play in the band, if they were band members. And they knew that when they came in, and they were pretty loyal. That was good, too. His choir was also grew, and I don't think they had a financial backer in that, but they did get robes, and they looked nice on the stage, and they grew to be over 100 in number one a couple of years. And that is tremendous when you think of how small Northfield High School was at that time. 100 there today would not mean the same as 100 in those days. Because they were, I know in the last yearbook, when my husband was up there, it took 2 pages to put the choir picture in the yearbook. You couldn't get them all and know who they were by having that kind of a picture. So they grew, and they put on some mighty fine concerts. Then he got known also for the operettas. He loved Gilbert and Sullivan, and he was told that high school people could not do Gilbert and Sullivan. It would be too difficult. And he proved them wrong, because the youngsters loved it, and he gave 5 different Gilbert and Sullivan operas. So that if you were in the choir all the time you were in high school, you could be a performer in 4 of them at least. And they looked forward to that. They looked forward to that. And some of them were in it 4 years. Mm-hmm. And some went on into Gilbert and Sullivan training. We had Jim Drew, it was a big family of children here, the Drews. He went out to New York and worked in Gilbert and Sullivan operas there. And many of them went on into other performing ways. So that was interesting. But there again, they were comparing with other schools around here, and it seemed to me that music sold itself during the hard times better than anything else. That it just, it brought people together in groups. It gave them something to do that was a little bit more relaxing than the textbook in front of you all the time. And there grew a love for music in the high school at that time. The children were full of it. The whole faculty was backing it, and it was successful. The part that my husband liked the least was the marching band for the football games. And he was glad when finally the school hired his assistant to do that part of the work. He did some good ones, but he sweat over them because his heart wasn't in that part of them. But the other parts are good. If you have the backing of anything, you want to go on and do better all the time. And I think he reached Northfield just at the time where the school was ready to have something like that, and that's what helped. And he stayed 38 years out there, so they used to call him Mr. Music Man around here. But then his health broke, and he collapsed at school one day with 3 weeks before his operetta was to be put on. They had had no stage training at all because one of the high school plays was being performed by Miss Panettone the month before, and she had use of that. So they knew their music, but they hadn't had much of the acting yet on stage except what they could do in their music room. And he became hospitalized that same day, and he was in the hospital when they gave it 3 weeks later. But the rest of the teachers rallied around, and the children rallied around, and they put that on, and it was a success. They did it for him. And that was the Pirates of Penzance, their last one that they did. And now we have those same things around us yet. Even our local theater has them occasionally. So we still have the Dover and Sullivan. But it proves that some of these things that college age level, say the high schoolers, cannot do, sometimes they can do them. And I think more so today than ever before, because they're just smarter than we were. They've had more advantages than we've ever had at that time. And so we should expect more from them. Well, I don't know of anything else. Can you think of anything?
No. I think that's very interesting. Thank you.
I don't.
As long as you're talking.
talking about burning of buildings, we watched the burning of the fish hatchery building, and I have slides to prove that. And we watched the old grade school burn in the middle of the night. I don't know what year that was, but we could look it up. And that was lucky that it happened at night. It might have harmed a lot of children had it happened. And they said there was so much oil on the floors that it made a beautiful fire because of the oiled floors. That's what they did. They used to oil the floors. And that would help the fire along. But it burned to the ground that night. And then another fire that we watched, and all the townspeople sat where the depot is, on the bank there. There was, I guess it's still there. I don't know. There's a big bank there. And across from there was this factory that was burning down. I think it was called the Globe Factory, or a part of the Globe Company. But we watched that in the middle of the night. And when there was a fire in town, the whole town turned off for it. We just sat there and stayed until the fire was out. And it was, that's community again. That's the small town attitude toward it all. So those are three fires that I have watched in this town in my time of living here. Another thing I didn't mention was that when we came here in 1930, the interurban tracks were still on Main Street. Now that went, they went from Pontiac down 8 Mile Road into Northville and then on to Ann Arbor some way. But the tracks were still in the Main Street pavement there. That was interesting. There was a, what do they call it, the crow's nest, I think, where they had something right in the middle of the street there, Main and Center, but that was gone, but it had just been recently gone when we got here, but I have seen pictures of it, and that was when the interurban tracks were there, too, so that's where they came and then left town again. And comparing that with the way it looks today makes you think back. I never saw the interurban cars. They were gone, and the tracks were still here. The vacant corner on Main and Center was vacant the year we came, so that's been vacant a long time. And so that dates back, it must have happened sometime in the 20s then when that fire was, but we didn't see that one. And that would make a good story, those that had it. I didn't mention one other thing comparing, talking about the music in here. Every spring, my husband organized a what do you call it, a music week. And there'd be concerts of some kind for a whole week, different. And during those weeks, one year we had the Ann Arbor Little Symphony come over. He had happened to be in school when he was doing his work in Ann Arbor with this director of the Little Symphony, and so he was glad to bring out this Little Symphony here. And that was quite an honor to have the whole symphony. It wasn't a big one, but it was very adequate. Come out here and give a good high-class concert. And then one other year, that we had the Detroit Symphony came here. And I have a picture of that somewhere that I'll probably find as I clean out of everything. In the old gymnasium of the old high school. It was downstairs in that place. Mm-hmm. And we have a good picture of that one. And showing that Northville brought in a lot of entertainment of various kinds for to improve the culture of Northville at the time. But those are two outstanding ones that I remembered, and they were both in the old high school gymnasium. That was good. Well, let's see. I need a leading question.
Well, I think you've covered a lot, and it's been most interesting.
Well, if you think of anything else, you can always come back.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.